From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to this Friday edition of Washington Watch. I know Sarah Perry is usually in for me on Fridays, but I'm actually going to be out all next week traveling with a group to Alaska, but I do hope to check in at some point. But for today, I want to continue the conversation that we started about America's independence and what is central to the understanding of freedom that made America the great experiment in self-government work. And our guest today, we're going to have first Congressman Mike Johnson of Louisiana, chairman of the Republican Study Committee. He's going to join me for a discussion of the role of our Declaration of Independence in our Constitution. Do they remain an essential part of our republic? Then New York Times bestselling author Eric Metaxas explains the connection between liberty, morality, and faith. We're going to talk about that. And then we're going to talk about the formative role of the Bible in America's founding documents with Dr. Daniel Dreisbach, professor in the School of Public Affairs at American University. And, you know, as I say, the Bible, as you'll hear from him, was fundamental in the founding of this nation. Therefore, I think it is foundational and fundamental in governing this nation going forward. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right. This week, our nation celebrates its 243rd birthday, and it gives us an opportunity, really a necessity, to reflect on the extraordinary gift of freedom that we have as Americans. Political freedom, the freedom to vote. Religious freedom, the freedom to believe and act on those beliefs. Economic freedom, the freedom to live and labor and spend our money how we want. And we see around the world in places like China, Iran, Saudi Arabia, North Korea, that those freedoms cannot be taken for granted because those folks don't have them. We are free because the framers of our nation carefully crafted a system that has endured, that has maintained that freedom and even expanded it and even brought it to other people in other places. But it all goes back to the Declaration of Independence and our Constitution. Joining me now is Congressman Mike Johnson of Louisiana. He represents the 4th District of Louisiana, serves on the Judiciary Committee, is a constitutional attorney, and, as I mentioned earlier, is the chairman of the Republican Study Committee. And he joins me now. Congressman Mike Johnson, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. It's always a delight to be with you.
Well, let's talk about these founding documents. First, the role of the Declaration of Independence and how it fits within the organic documents of our republic.
Well, you know, the Declaration is very difficult to overstate when you're talking about its importance. You know, it's our nation's birth certificate. It's where it all began. And you know, G.K. Chesterton was the famous British philosopher, and he famously said one time, America is the only nation in the world that is founded upon a creed, and it's articulated with almost theological lucidity in the Declaration of Independence. And we know the language well, that second paragraph that's become just part of the fabric of who we are. We hold these truths to be self-evident, you know, and we often stop when I'm talking to young people or a college group and say, what is a self-evident truth, by the way? It's something you cannot not know, because it's stamped upon your heart by your maker. But, you know, Jefferson wrote the language. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. They're endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. Among these, the rights of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. So why was that so incredible, so revolutionary? Because, you know, Tony, we're the first nation, really, in the history of the world that was founded upon that idea, that there's no king, there's no sovereign other than God himself. Our rights derive from him, and that is the foundational truth this great nation is built upon.
I mean, when you look at this, many argue this is it's a covenant. It's a covenantal nation that we, you know, go back to the Pilgrims into the Mayflower Compact. And you look at all of those documents together, and clearly they were setting out something new and unique. And in you go from the Declaration of Independence to the Constitution, which is that agreement between the people and their government and the terms by which they will surrender certain rights in order to preserve the freedom that we can all enjoy. And these documents remain important, although some are trying to reject them.
It's really shocking what we've seen in recent months and recent days, where you have nominees, the candidates for the Democratic nomination for president who stand on a stage and openly avow socialist principles. I saw a poll that came out a few weeks back where supposedly 43% of millennials today say they would rather live in a socialist nation. Tony, they don't know what it is they're asking for. You know, there's a reason that we're this exceptional nation, and it is grounded, it is founded upon those principles in the Declaration and the Constitution, as you said. And, you know, John Quincy Adams is attributed with a quote. He said the highest glory of the American Revolution was the fact that it connected in one indissoluble bond the principles of civil government with the principles of Christianity. We find the origin and the basis for all these foundational beliefs in this truth in the Word of God. There's a reason that we're blessed as we are, because we are one nation under Him. And if we forget that and we opt for something socialism, you know, grounded in Marxism, it's a godless philosophy. It denies the existence of our Creator. That is exactly the antithesis of who we are as Americans.
Well, that prompted me to think of a quote of President Ronald Reagan back at a prayer breakfast in Dallas in 1984, when he said, if we ever cease to be one nation under God, we will be a nation gone under.
That's right.
Clearly an understanding, and the documents, and up until really the last 20, 25, 30 years, the intensity of this battle to remove this understanding of a creator, of the role of faith, and when I say faith, the Christian faith in the founding of this nation. And, you know, without that, it really doesn't work. And so that's why there are folks like you and myself and others that are working to preserve an understanding of these documents, but also their application to the way we govern today.
Well, that's exactly right, because when you replace that foundation, you know, Scripture, Psalm 11:3, if the foundations be destroyed, what will the righteous do? You remove that foundation. It's a dangerous thing for the country because it leaves a vacuum. And what fills the vacuum? Well, we've seen it already. It's the rise of secular humanism, you know, a man-centered philosophy and ideology over a God-centered philosophy. And look, that, as we've said, goes right against the grain of who we are as Americans. There's a reason that we are exceptional. And we're seeing right now, we've seen it play out every day. There's even, you know, my colleagues in Congress, we have elected representatives of the people who are coming to Washington and advocating for those anti-un-American ideals. I mean, they're trying to move as simple as removing the phrase, so help me God, from the witness oaths in our committee hearings that you and I have talked about in recent weeks. I mean, you see this overt, almost an aversion to the principles that made this nation as great as it is. And we have to stand against that, and we have to educate. The great challenge is to educate the next generation of Americans on why these principles are so important.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, my guest, Congressman Mike Johnson of Louisiana, chairman of the Republican Study Committee, talking about the importance of these organic documents and the principles behind them. You know, you were talking about how we now have presidential candidates and some of your colleagues in Congress who are advocating for socialism. Now, they want to put a little polish on it, call it democratic socialism, as if that makes any difference. I guess you can vote to have the government take everything away from you, I guess is what they're talking about. But how can Americans be misled when all they have to do is look to our South, down to Central and South America, see what's happening with Venezuela, and somehow continue to be enamored with the idea of socialism?
I tell you, Tony, that they're not paying attention to the facts. And I went the week before Easter this year. I went to the border of Venezuela with nine of my colleagues, a bipartisan congressional trip. And we stood on the Colombia side of that border and watched 25,000 people desperately cross from Venezuela over the border into Colombia, which is, you know, no great oasis, as we know. They're fleeing Venezuela because of the socialist regime there, but because of Maduro, you know, the government took over all the industry, and it led ultimately to chaos. They didn't have hospitals, running water, or electricity. The inflation rate on the day we were there, the Venezuela currency was 1,000,000%. You know, that's what socialism, that's the effect of it. That ultimately is what happens every time it's tried. And all of it's grounded, as you and I pointed out before, and to Marxism. I mean, you know, socialism was just an incremental step to the communist utopia, as right. Karl Marx posited that. And they believe that you should do it by bloodshed and by the sword. Now that the so-called democratic socialists, as you said, it's a kinder, gentler kind of socialism because they want to do it from within our institutions. But it's no less sinister, and the result ultimately will be the same.
And the two major obstacles for them in accomplishing this is faith and family. They have to break down the family, and they have to rid faith from the public square, which when you see what's happening in our country today, the policies that fragment the family, the messages being sent through our education system, and, of course, the outright attacks on faith, I mean, they're marching in that direction.
They are, and as we often say, you know, when religious liberty is taken from a people, their political freedom soon follows. And you're right. They target specifically adherents of the Christian faith because they're often the last group that will stand and say, no, just as the founders did, our rights do not derive from the government. They come from the King of Kings, from our Creator. And that's a threat to communist and socialist regimes, and that's why they have to snuff it out. You see that all around the globe. And America is the last, as Reagan also said, the last great hope of man on the earth. And we believe that, and it's only because God has blessed us as he has.
And it is incumbent upon us as followers of Jesus Christ to exercise these freedoms that we presently have, to live out our faith in such a way as it impacts the world around us and changes the community and bringing people back to an understanding of these foundational principles. And I mean, it's intertwined, I believe, with evangelizing. We got to share the faith so people understand, first off, what true freedom is, but then challenge them to live that out.
There's no question about it, and there's never been a more important time, certainly in American history, to live and be the salt and light. And, you know, we see that now. This next generation, their minds are being changed, and we're in a battle right now for the heart and soul of a country. And it's difficult to overstate the stakes, how high they are right now. But it is not the time to put our light under a bushel basket, right? We're supposed to go right out into the culture and share that great truth, because it's the truth ultimately that liberates. It's the source of our freedom. I heard a pastor say one time, a Christian in a generation like this is not supposed to be a thermometer, but a thermostat. And he unpacked it a little bit. He said, you know, a thermometer just checks the temperature and barometer of his environment, and he adjusts. A thermostat changes the environment.
Absolutely.
And that's the kind of boldness we need to have with Christian faith, to go out and stand boldly against that culture, against that rising tide, and tell people where the true answers are found.
That's right. This is our time. This is our moment.
That's right.
Congressman Mike Johnson, thanks so much for taking time out on this Friday to join us.
Happy belated 4th, and y'all be blessed. We'll see you soon.
All right. See you back in Washington. Mike Johnson, Congressman from the 4th District of Louisiana. Look, this is not the time to shrink back, not the time to go silent. This is the time to stand firm, to proclaim truth, to be bold, to be courageous. All right, don't go away. On the other side of the break, Eric Metaxas joins us to talk more about how we keep this republic of ours. That's next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. More to come.
Can United States senators interrogate court nominees on their religious beliefs? This is a controversial question that our country is facing today. In light of this controversy, FRC has taken up the task of answering this question with one of their latest publications, Rebels Without a Clause. We've seen in recent Senate confirmation hearings a troubling pattern arise where senators have begun questioning presidential nominees about their faith as an attempt to discredit them. These interrogations have gone so far as to asking nominees of their theological beliefs, church membership, and associations with faith-based nonprofits. It has been an alarming display of hostility toward religion and people of faith. Visit frc.org/test to learn what questioning the Constitution's No Religious Test Clause allows and forbids in the process of confirming judicial nominees. That's frc.org/test.
The latest Trojan horse on Capitol Hill is called the Equality Act. The way the left is advertising this bill is misleading because it does not further equality at all. It would actually violate current protections in place that allow private institutions and people of faith to freely act in accordance to their deeply held beliefs. The Equality Act explicitly removes religious liberty protections that were originally put in place with bipartisan support. Its stated goal is equality, but its actual result is harm to vast members of communities, individuals, and Americans as a whole by undercutting our foundational freedom of religion. Is this really what equality looks like? A more fitting name for the Equality Act would be the Inequality Act. For more information on the mass threat of the Equality Act, visit frc.org/EqualityAct2019. That's frc.org/EqualityAct2019.
Many advances made by the homosexual movement are based on the claim that sexual orientation is immutable or unchangeable. This belief was a deciding factor in the 2015 Supreme Court case that redefined marriage to include same-sex couples. It has been a key argument for LGBT activists fighting to restrict or ban therapies for people seeking help to overcome their same-sex attraction. But is sexual orientation written in stone? Should we brand people with an immovable sexual orientation label and tell them, you can't change, don't try to change, even if they want to? In a new publication from FRC, we reveal that sexual orientation can change. Survey data shows that heterosexuality is largely stable, but homosexuality is not. Even pro-LGB scholars are calling for the immutability argument to be abandoned. The question is, why is the LGB movement pushing this false argument? To learn more, visit frc.org/sexualorientation. That's frc.org/sexualorientation.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Friday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Just continuing our conversation about America's freedom, the liberty that we have, the importance that you and I play in preserving that freedom. And when I was thinking about this discussion, I was thinking about, you know, who would be good to have this conversation with? And at the top of my head came the name Eric Metaxas. He is a senior fellow and lecturer at large for King's College in New York City. He has a nationally syndicated radio program, New York Times bestselling author, and he's the author of one book in particular that fits this conversation so well today. It's If You Can Keep It, Forgotten Promise of American Liberty. And I welcome Eric back to the program. Eric, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Oh, thanks for having me, Tony. And nothing is closer to my heart than this subject. My book, If You Can Keep It, really was the culmination of a discovery I made not too many years ago. I was reading a book by our friend Oz Guinness, and I was simply staggered and ashamed that I didn't really understand the link between faith and freedom. In other words, I'm all about freedom. I'm pro-freedom. I'm pro-Christian. I'm pro-faith. But I didn't understand the link. And then I realized that the founders saw that there was no way to have American-style self-government unless you have virtue and unless you have vibrant faith in America. But of course, the paradox is that the faith can't be forced. And so it's this beautiful idea that Oz Guinness calls the golden triangle of freedom, mm-hmm. that freedom requires virtue, virtue requires faith, and faith in turn requires freedom. You have to have religious liberty. And it's such a magical idea. And so I put it at the center of my book, If You Can Keep It. And I thought, I just want to spend the rest of my life spreading this idea to Americans because it is the most beautiful connection between Christian faith and the freedom that we all hold dear. It's not some coincidence that those of us who love liberty also love the God who's the author of liberty. So it really is something very close to my heart. And, of course, this time of year, I talk about it any chance I get.
Well, and it's essential. And you mentioned Oz Guinness. Oz is actually traveling in Europe. I wanted to get him on today as well to talk about his latest book, which really, you know, kind of takes yours to the next step, where he does the comparison between the French Revolution and the American Revolution,
right,
which to me is just so profound, because and I don't want to talk about his book, but those principles, and they're in yours as well. But the fact that the left really today is pursuing the French type of freedom.
Yeah, the French Revolution leads to bloodbath. It leads to anarchy in the streets. It leads to Antifa. It leads to every kind of madness, a fake egalitarianism that becomes socialism, that becomes state control, and lack of freedom. I mean, it's just so clear. And unless you understand how American liberty works, you can't possibly keep it. Franklin, you know, leaving the Constitutional Convention in 1787, was asked by a Mrs. Powell, "Dr. Franklin, what have you given us, a monarchy or a republic?" People didn't know what had they done in there. You know, what had they been doing for that 100 days in the summer of 1787, creating this constitution? And he says, "A republic, madam, if you can keep it," meaning that you, the people, we, the people, must keep the republic. It doesn't keep itself. There's no system where you flick the switch and then you can go off and it continues. We, the people, have to do the work of governing ourselves, and if we don't do it, someone will govern us. We will be governed by a bloated federal bureaucracy. We will be governed by a tyrant. Someone will govern us if we don't govern ourselves. And it's sort of this magical, beautiful idea in history, and we've ceased to teach it. We've ceased to understand it. So I wrote my book, If You Can Keep It, saying that we have got to get back to understanding this. And when you understand it, it leads to all kinds of other stuff. In other words, you begin thinking of ideas of how you can keep it and what you can do to help your kids understand it and celebrate freedom and all that kind of stuff. So I obviously get excited, because I feel like there is no second America. You know, it's like if we cease to keep the republic, it's not like somebody else is going to come in. You know, you're going to get China. You're going to get the opposite of what we have. And so we have been given a sacred charge, a holy charge by God. And if we don't keep it, it goes out. That's it, you know. And so I have to say that we really are living at a crucial time in history. I think the Lord is looking to his people to be the church, because when the church is the church, freedom will flourish. So it's an exciting idea, and of course I'm very hopeful, otherwise I wouldn't have written the book.
Well, I often talk about it in these terms, that the republic requires participation. Having a republic is not a spectator sport, and I think too many Christians are standing on the side, and if we're not engaged, we can very well lose the republic. And you made that point. You know, we were both kind of in the last election cycle. We were watching with interest as Donald Trump emerged. And then, of course, when it came down to a choice between him and Hillary Clinton, in our personal capacities, we made that choice. But there have been those that have been criticizing, even recently, as we're looking into the next election, Christians getting involved in supporting a candidate who more clearly aligns with biblical principles and policies when it comes to their office.
I mean, I understand why they say that, right? I mean, we're not idiots here, okay? It's not like Tony Perkins and Eric Metaxas would say, you know what, all that Bible stuff, the heck with it. We want political power. So suddenly, adultery is not such a bad thing, or talking nastily about women or something. We haven't changed one bit. This is a political calculation. It's that we have a choice between two candidates, and you cannot keep your hands dirty. You'll never vote for Jesus. He will never run for president. And so you're going to have to vote for a sinner, a dirty sinner. Some are more overt in their sin than others, but every time we've got to make a choice. And when people behave as though they don't have to make a choice, I think, whom are they kidding? When did we have people voted for John F. Kennedy? He brought prostitutes into the White House. We don't take his face off of the 50-cent coin. We don't change JFK Airport. We say, hey, you know, whatever. Everybody has problems, but we look at him in a different way. He was killed, and we revere him. There's so many people whose names we are looking at this president, at Trump right now, in a way that no one has ever been scrutinized.
Well, part of it, I think, is because, a large part of it, is because of his policies. Eric, we're up against a break. I want you to hold on because we want to come back and finish this conversation. Folks, Eric Metaxas is my guest. We're going to continue this conversation on the other side of the break, so don't go anywhere. You hear me? Don't go anywhere. Unless you want to go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, going to be back right after this.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
There is unprecedented religious persecution around the globe. In recent years, research has found increasing governmental and social hostility towards religious believers worldwide. For the last 10 years, Christians have been harassed in more countries, including the United States, than any other religious group. While the specific threats to religious freedom vary in type and intensity, one common source is the legal and cultural support for apostasy, blasphemy, and anti-conversion laws, which often threaten the freedom to choose or change one's faith. In a new publication from Family Research Council, we list which nations around the world have these unjust laws on the books and spotlight people who have faced severe penalties simply for sharing or changing their faith. For more information on religious hostility due to apostasy, blasphemy, and anti-conversion laws around the world, visit frc.org/ABA laws. That's frc.org/ABA laws.
You're listening to Washington Watch. So glad to have you with us on this Friday afternoon. I'm Tony Perkins, your host, and joining me via phone in New York City is our guest, Eric Metaxas, author, syndicated radio host, the author of the book, If You Can Keep It, The Promise, The Forgotten Promise of American Liberty. That's really kind of the topic we're talking about right now, and why, as Christians, we've got to be engaged in the process of preserving our republic. Eric, thanks so much for sticking around with us. Let me finish that thought there as you were talking about, you know, that there's no one perfect that's ever been on the ballot, and there's this kind of new standard that's emerged that is being applied to Donald Trump and the fact that evangelicals have been supportive of him.
Well, I mean, listen, it all gets very funny, right? I mean, do I align in terms of my personality more with Mike Pence? Of course I do. But Mike Pence didn't win the nomination. There are all kinds of people that didn't win the nomination. So when somebody wins the nomination, you've got to figure out what is the right thing to do. Now,
let me stop you right there, because that's a difficult thing to do. That requires us to think, to pray, and to act, and not to be in some kind of pre-programmed mode of saying, well, this person has done this, therefore, I'm just going to sit on the sidelines.
Tony, it requires us to get our hands dirty. This is the issue, is that if you're so prideful that you say, like, oh, I would never vote for so-and-so, you have to say, wait a second. This is not about you. This is about the future of America and the future of freedom. And if you care about poor kids 20 years from now, you're going to have to suck it up and make a choice. And you may have to vote for somebody you really don't like Donald Trump maybe. But you know what? If you don't, and so many Christians didn't, you allow Hillary Clinton or whoever it is to take power. And if you are so myopic that you don't think that it matters. I'm here to tell you, folks, you have to open your eyes. You have to understand that we are at a tipping point in America. We could lose so many of the things, the freedoms that we have today. People talk about, you know, rolling back Roe v. Wade. It's going to take us back to the 1950s. Let me tell you something. We could go way past that, you know, back to the 1750s, where we no longer have American-style freedom. We have to understand these things can be reversed. The Constitution has never been in peril the way it is today. You've got plenty lawyers, plenty judges who don't have an original view of the Constitution, who think the founders were all wrong, who would be happy to grant abortion on demand into the ninth month to birth, who would be happy to grant transgender rights to the point that women are ruled out of existence, and on and on and on. People act as though all of this is fictional, this is in the future, it's fear-mongering. David French wrote an article at the Time Magazine website recently attacking me by name, but attacking all Christians who would, you know, go so far as to support the president. And I think to myself, my goodness, what have we come to when you can't support a flawed man? Nixon was flawed, but McGovern, you know, wanted to take us down a socialist road. Every person we vote for is flawed, but we have to make a decision. And I really think this idea that I can keep my hands clean, there were plenty Germans who refused to get in the plot against Hitler. They said, I'm not going to get political. I'm going to keep my hands clean. And it's almost like saying that my purity is more important than the Jews who are going in boxcars to Treblinka and Auschwitz. And you have to at some point say, God calls you to get your hands dirty. He got his hands dirty when he came to this sin-soaked earth. He came, born in a stable in blood. I mean, this is the God that we worship. He says, I stoop and I get dirty because I love you. And the idea that we can be sort of holy and above the fray and pure, it ends up being a Pharisaical view of things. We thank the Lord that, oh, thank you, Lord, that I'm not like those sinners, you know, and I want to be pure. It's not about our purity. And I think that some of us have lost our view on this, and we have to fight for the freedoms that we have. There were many Minutemen and others who lost their lives 240-something years ago for freedom. And there's some people who would have said, oh, I think killing is wrong. I wouldn't pick up a musket. I wouldn't fight King George. Let it go. I'm not on that page. First of all, I don't think it's biblical. I don't think that's biblical. And right now we're in a battle. A lot of people in the church, they're not understanding this, and we can lose it all. The church has to be the church. We have to understand that God is the one who calls us to politics. Wilberforce was called to politics. Many have been called to politics. They would have rather been, you know, praying in a nice, clean church, but sometimes the Lord calls us to fight for his purposes in history, and I do think that's where we are now.
Yeah, I could not agree more. And getting our hands dirty does not mean that we are compromising biblical truth. It means that we are taking the risk of people misunderstanding what we do.
That happened to Bonhoeffer. Plenty of his Christian friends thought, what is wrong with him? He's gotten political. He's, you know, a double agent. What is he doing? And he thought, you know what, I answer to an audience of one. I answer to God. God is my judge, and I'm going to do what I think he calls me to do. And I don't like being called names by Christians. I don't like when David French says that I'm motivated by fear, or that anybody like you or me, that we're motivated by fear, that we're going to lose power. I know that's not true. But at the same time, I have to do what I know is right.
That's
and
right.
But it does sadden me that we have Christians and conservatives who seem to rather, you know, let things go down in flames and hope that, you know, 40 years from now we can recover if we're pure enough right now. I don't quite get that.
I don't think that's possible. Eric, I would love to sit here and talk all night because I wanted to unpack more about the triangle, because virtue and faith are under attack, putting liberty at risk. But we're out of time. You know what that means. Thanks so much, my friend, for joining us.
God bless you. Thanks, Tony.
All right. Derek McTaxis. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. And it is a good book. And those principles are really key. And we're going to continue the conversation on the other side of this break. More Washington Watch to come. Don't go anywhere.
Did you know that babies survive failed abortions? Sadly, many of these babies are denied their human right to life and are allowed to die. Currently, there is no federal criminal statute in place to protect these babies after they're born alive. Congress and state legislatures across the country have responded by putting forth legislation to protect infants who survive abortion. However, leftist politicians have blocked efforts in Congress and in state legislatures to pass the Born Alive Abortion Survivors Protection Act, which requires that life-saving medical care be given to babies born alive after failed abortion attempts. We must decide as a country where we stand on the issue of infanticide, to either pursue humane protections for those most vulnerable in our society, or continue to subject innocent human life to the whims of abortionists. For more information, visit frc.org/bornalive. Today, military personnel are at greater risk than ever of suffering from a mental health condition. On average, 21 active and retired military members take their own lives every day. Richard Gleason, a military and veteran advocate in the area of mental health, recently shared evidence that faith-based solutions can help stop this crisis. Here's what Richard had to say.
There's new science out that they watch people while they're praying or have a religious relationship. The frontal part of their brain, if I'm correct in remembering what they told me, it strengthens it. It reduces depression, reduces anxiety and stress while you're doing it. So not only did God give us prayer as a way to alleviate our spirit, it also alleviates our mind and our bodies. Our bodies react in a positive way to a faith-based relationship.
Visit frc.org/speakers to hear more.
Did you know that thanks to President Trump, abortion giant Planned Parenthood can no longer receive up to $60 million in federal funding? This new federal protection for the unborn is thanks to a rule change that the Trump administration implemented to the Title X Family Planning Grant Program, which will take effect in May 2019. Not only do the new Title X rule changes take funding away from our nation's largest abortion supplier, they also ensure that taxpayer dollars are not used for abortion and open the door for pro-life pregnancy resource centers and other faith-based organizations to apply for Title X funds, thus expanding the health care options of needy families who are experiencing unexpected pregnancies. For more information about the new Title X rule changes that protect the unborn and increase health care options, visit frc.org/Title X. That's frc.org/Title X.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Friday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Again, if you miss anything on your way home, well, you can find it later at the website, TonyPerkins.com. All of our programs are archived there. Now, better yet, here's something you need. You need the Stand Firm app. You can get this at the App Store. This not only alerts you to Washington Watch each day, but as we've been talking about, you know, our Republic, our government requires our participation. This is not a, you know, our government is not for spectators. It's for participants. And our Stand Firm app gives you the, number one, alerts you when you need to take action, but then gives you the tools to do so. So go to the App Store, get the Stand Firm app, or go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. Okay. You know, we've been talking about the importance of religion in the founding of our country and how religious freedom is essential to all of our freedoms, our social freedoms, our political freedoms. But increasingly, we've seen this issue under attack, this freedom of religion under attack in the public square. You know, it's gotten so bad that a lower court recently found that a cross-shaped memorial to soldiers who died in World War I was unconstitutional. Now, fortunately, just a couple of weeks ago, the Supreme Court overturned that decision and allowed that monument to stand. But these attacks continue, whether it's on the Bible or something that makes reference to the Bible. And I want to go back in history a little bit and talk about how fundamental the Bible, religion, all of these elements were to the founding of this nation, and why they remain important. And to join me in that conversation is Dr. Daniel Dreisbach. He earned his doctorate in philosophy from Oxford and now teaches in the School of Public Affairs at the American University here in D.C. He is the author of Reading the Bible with the Founding Fathers. Dr. Dreisbach, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, earlier this week, you may have heard when Nike pulled a special 4th of July shoe that would honor Betsy Ross for creating the original American flag. You know, we're seeing patriotism, we're seeing religious freedom, all of these things under attack. But quite frankly, in my view, I see it's unraveling the very fabric of America. And many people, quite frankly, don't understand how important these things are to our republic.
You're absolutely right. You know, this is a nation we celebrate this week, the Declaration of Independence. This is one of our founding documents, and it's a document that presupposes a creator God. In fact, the presence of a creator is absolutely essential to the vital points that this document makes. And perhaps one of the greatest statements in our political literature, we have these words, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. And then it goes on in the next line, next paragraph, to say that they are endowed by their creator with certain inalienable rights. And so the idea that our rights are derived from a divine source and absolutely essential to this political system that was created at the end of the 18th century and has served us so well, and yet we see vital aspects of it being threatened in our own time.
Now, we hear a lot today about separation of church and state. I mean, actually, you know, it's been going on for about, really, it's been for the last two or three decades. I mean, that is the cry of the left. In the Founding Fathers, we're told the Founding Fathers wanted to separate religion from public life. What role did the Founding Fathers believe religion should play in public and civic life in America?
Yeah, I think that's an excellent question. And let's go right to the very beginning. The very first Continental Congress that met in Philadelphia in September of 1774, their very first substantive act was to call for a minister to come and lead this Congress in prayer and Bible reading. There they were, meeting in Carpenter's Hall. And there are wonderful reports and accounts from those who were present that this was a profoundly moving event. They read aloud Psalm 35. And so from the very beginning, this was a political cause, a political movement that thought that prayer and Bible reading played a vital role. We are celebrating this week the Declaration of Independence on July 4th, 1776. But let me remind you that in the afternoon of July 4th on that year, the Continental Congress formed a committee of three men made up of John Adams, Benjamin Franklin, and Thomas Jefferson, and charged them with the task of designing a great seal for the United States. And they went away for a few weeks, and they came up with a plan, and their plan was an image of Moses standing on the banks of the Red Sea with his arm extended, and we see the waters parting, allowing for escape from Egyptian bondage by the children of Israel, a sign of profound divine intervention, divine providence. And they thought that was a fitting image for a great seal for this new nation. Now, as it turned out, the Congress adjourned before they voted on that. But think about that. Adams, Franklin, and Jefferson thought that was a fitting portrayal. By the way, it also included a pillar of fire or a pillar of a cloud leading them, of course, mm-hmm. which we read about in Exodus, which was that great signposts of the divine leading the children of Israel. And let me just mention one other event that's pertinent to this week. On July 4th, 1787, The Constitutional Convention was meeting in Independence Hall there in Philadelphia. And what did they do? On that day, they thought it was appropriate for them to march down the street a few blocks. They were led in procession by George Washington, where they had, again, a prayer service. So those individuals who were so intimately involved in founding the Republic and leading this nation in its earliest days, they could not imagine, it seems to me, taking these important actions and steps without seeking divine intervention and prayer and supplication to the divine.
Well, when you read their speeches, their statements, they are, interwoven are Scripture references, references to God. You see it throughout all of their statements. So somehow to say that, this was not important, they did not see this as a part of public life, is just not an accurate read of history.
That's right. I mean, there is no literary or political source that is cited more frequently in the political literature of the American founding than the Bible. It pervades the literature of that age. So you find frequent citations and references to political texts. For example, here's just one example. They frequently turn to Exodus 18:21 when thinking about what kind of leaders do we need. And you may recall this is a text when Moses' father-in-law comes to him and gives him advice on what kind of leaders to lead the children of Israel. And he says, find able men, men who love truth, hate covetousness. And the founding generation made frequent recurrence to that text when thinking about what kind of leaders do we need as a nation. Benjamin Franklin cited that specific biblical text in the debates in the Constitutional Convention when they were debating what kind of leaders do we want to attract to public life, to public service.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. My guest, Dr. Daniel Dreisbach. He is a professor at the School of Public Affairs at the American University here in D.C. So that fact, Dr. Dreisbach, raises the question, this question, what happened? Where did we go wrong? Where did it go off the rails?
I think there's a lot of things that are at play here. I think part of this the predicament that we find ourselves in is partly we haven't taught ourselves history. We haven't studied our history. You know, when we read the story of the children of Israel in the Old Testament, there's constant counseling. Remember the story of your fathers, because we as frail human beings are so quick to forget, great blessings from heaven. That is the story of history. It was a story of the children of Israel. You remember how quickly they forgot the divine deliverance from Egyptian bondage. And I think we suffer from that same problem. We have not studied our history. We've ignored our history. Now, you add to that, we increasingly live in a culture that has a certain animosity towards the Christian faith, towards the Bible, and they are always looking for opportunities to diminish or denigrate that role in history. We've even found courts, as you noted earlier, who are very happy to participate in the stripping of public life, public spaces, of evidences of that heritage that we once enjoyed.
Yeah, I was just talking earlier in the program. We were talking with Eric Metaxas and discussing, the golden triangle that Oz Guinness talks about, where you've got liberty is contingent upon, is one of the sides contingent upon virtue and truth, as he pointed out, in virtue and faith, rather. And those two things, virtue and faith, are under attack, and the very liberty that we enjoy and that we desire is at risk as we see increasingly this rejection of virtue and faith.
Yes. You know, I don't think you'd find a dissenting voice in the founding era who would not embrace this idea that religion nurtures virtue and morality that are essential to Republican self-government. And so this statement was made perhaps most famously and most succinctly by George Washington in his farewell address, one of the great speeches of American history. And at the time, the line that was most remembered from that speech is a line that goes something like this. He says, "Of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports." He's telling us that there's a vital role for religion that nourishes this morality if we're going to maintain a system of self-government. Now, we oftentimes skip over the very next line in that speech. He then goes on to say, "In vain would that man claim the tribute of patriotism who should labor to subvert these great pillars of human happiness." It's a stunning statement. He says, if you're laboring to undermine the pillars of religion and morality that hold up this regime of self-government, you can't call yourself a patriot.
Right. It is
that
an amazing statement.
That tells you how seriously he took this role of religion and morality in this grand experiment in Republican self-government that our founders embarked on 243 years ago this week.
And that farewell address has been studied, probably one of the most widely studied documents in political science around the world. I would add one other quote that I think is very succinct in summing this up, and it came about a year later from the second president of the United States, John Adams, when he was talking to the militia, the officers of militia in Massachusetts, when he said that our government is for a moral and a religious people. It is wholly inadequate for the government of any other.
That's right. That's right. Let me give you another John Adams quote. He once said, and I find this a very intriguing statement, he once described the Bible as, quote, "the most Republican book in the world." The most Republican book in the world. Now, why would he say that? Now, let's first note, we're speaking here of Republicanism as a system of government. We're not talking about a political party.
Right.
But why did he say that? Because he believed that you could not sustain a system of self-government, which was essential to this idea of Republicanism, unless you had that vibrant morality, and he saw the Bible as the tool or the instrument to nurture that morality, that civic virtue. And so for that reason, he calls the Bible the most Republican book in the world. And let me just add very quickly, I don't think there would have been very many people who would have disagreed with that statement when he made it over 200 years ago. It would be a profoundly controversial statement if a president made that statement today, but I think it was just an acknowledged position in the founding era that, yes, of course the Bible nurtures those virtues that we're going to need to govern ourselves. It implants that internal moral compass that a people need to orderly govern themselves, replacing the external control by the whip and the rod of an authoritarian ruler.
And see, that's what I think is lost today, an understanding that religion is not your enemy, that
a freely
exercised public religion, allowing people to live their lives according to their faith, whether it's in the marketplace, whether it's in, you know, education or government, to be able to govern themselves is fundamental to preserving the liberties that we enjoy. Because once that's gone, the only way to keep man in check is tyrannical government.
Yeah. It's a question. You have a choice to make. Do you want to be ruled by the external whip and the rod of rulers, or would you rather be ruled from an internal moral compass, one that is shaped and nurtured by those values that we read about in Scripture? It's a choice we have to make as a people, and it was a choice that the founding generation made, and I sometimes wonder, what kind of choice are we choosing to make in our own age?
Yes, that's why these conversations are so important. Dr. Dreisbach, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for coming on today and look forward to having another conversation about what I think is fundamentally important to America's future.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Folks, out of time, but I want to thank you for joining us. And if you missed any of that interview, you'll want to go back to TonyPerkins.com and listen to it. It is critical that we uphold this freedom that we enjoy as Americans by upholding religious freedom and exercising that religious freedom. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.